Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. We have a great show for you tonight. I am so happy to have back. It's been a long time, but I finally was able to get Jess to come back. Guitars in the Classroom. She's so busy. They're doing so much with Guitars in the Classroom. It's difficult to book a time, but we got her in. And we have some other people in here that I'm very honored to have in studio. Let me do the introductions real quick. Here's Jess over here. And next to her is Scott Detweiler, another guitarist, artist. I got it right?
You got it right.
I got it right. Come on closer to the mic. I gotta get you.
Yeah, you got it right.
There we go.
Okay.
And another guitarist, artist. He works with Guitars in the Classroom. And he's a representative for AMI Guitars, which had donated some guitars. We'll talk about that in a minute. And Sherry Goldsmith, she's another artist, another guitarist. And she also works with the kids, and we're going to talk a little bit about that. Our main topic tonight is about music for special needs. But I want to say up front, the reason I did this show was a couple years ago, Jess does breakfasts over at the NAMM show. And she kind of shows everybody what's going on with guitars in the classroom. And she was showing us some of the stuff they were doing for special needs at that time. And she basically had us all participate as if we were students. And we're going to do that tonight. And what I found, and I mentioned to her, was the stuff that they were doing, especially for building confidence and expression, being, you know, uninhibited. To me, it didn't really matter whether they were special needs or not. It applies to all kids, because I see that hesitancy and, you know, with a lot of bullying that's going on and peer pressure, especially with social media and stuff, it's much probably more intense than when we were kids. But at the same time, people are afraid or inhibited from expressing themselves, and in especially music, where it's a very personal thing. So I wanted to just kind of throw that out there while you're listening to this thing, because a lot of what they're going to talk about in the tools and the way they get the kids to perform, it applies more than just special needs, though that's important in itself. So I just wanted to mention that. So welcome, guys. I really am happy to have you guys. So first of all, we got to catch up. So real quick, I know I'm trying to rush because
real
it goes by.
Something that just doesn't happen very well. But
what I want to do is basically give us an update of what's going on with guitars in class, because a lot's happened since the last time we had you on the show.
Yeah. The programs are spreading. If you're unfamiliar with our work, we serve teachers and school staff and community volunteers by teaching them to play the guitar and the ukulele, sing pretty well, and then apply all of that learning in the classroom with children. So that way they can learn to do all their subject area lessons with songs embedded mm-hmm. into the lessons, and then they write lyrics. And when the kids are writing lyrics with the teachers, they don't forget anything that they're writing. So we use really well-known old melodies, which is sort of a folk preservation move, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing back songs that are 200 years old, 100 years old, or just, you know, coming in from, you know, Union songs and Pete Seeger, and give them new life with the really little kids starting at 3.5 years old if they're in preschool or transitional kindergarten. So we do all of this and include everybody that wants to come in and do it. Our focus is on Title I, which is poverty schools, you know, economically challenged, and high poverty when we can do it. But, you know, we don't hold it against kids if their parents make a decent paycheck,
mm-hmm.
so they can play too. So we're doing all of that work around the country. We're training teachers from all over the place. And we have active training programs in several states and are starting new ones. We just actually are getting started in Tennessee now with a little help from this guy and AMI Sigma Guitars. But Shiri is our teaching artist, one of our teaching artists here in Los Angeles. And she's been working with the transitional kindergarten and kindergarten children in classes based on teaching literacy through music. So while all of these things are going on, we started doing research into how we could create inclusion in music for children in special ed classrooms.
Now, I just want to interject one of the things, because this is one of the topics that we had talked about when you first came on the show. And actually, when I was in school, we kind of studied this a little bit with Duke Miller at SC. And the thing is, what they found out is when kids learn an instrument, whether, you know, as they're learning ear training, coordination, and all of this stuff. What they're noticing is when kids are playing musical instruments and learning music, there's an increase of in all their other subjects. They get better, and that's, and it's dramatic. It's not just a little bit; it's major.
Yeah.
And I've told, like I've said before, one of my friends, I used to always give music to my friends that had kids. Like, listen to this, a little bit of classical, country, jazz, just spread it around. Don't just listen to what you like. And one of my friends, her child is 7 now, and she's has a real propensity for languages.
Oh, that's
And
great.
I think that's definitely because of listening, the ear training and stuff like that.
Yeah, it's all in the same part of the brain. Right?
So anyway, I just wanted to interject
Thank you for doing that. That's wonderful. You know, one of the things that makes Guitars in the Classroom go are all the companies that help us out, that sponsor, and all of the people who get involved and participate, whether they're volunteering in a classroom or they're donating money, whatever they're doing. And all these magical connections happen, which is how this organization has been growing and thriving. And now what's really exciting, we started exploring adapting music instruction so that children who had limited motor skills or were completely nonverbal or had some level of paralysis could also play instruments, also access their musicality. And what happens to a lot of kids in special ed, not only are they left out of music because there's just not enough to go around, and and also sometimes people are afraid to send something that's so stimulating into special ed because there's such a diverse range of needs of the kids and a diverse age group, and there are a lot of kids and not a lot of teachers, and the paraprofessionals who help out are already helping 2 to 3 children. So if you put something that's highly stimulating in that environment, unless it's deployed in such a way that the children are, instead of getting overstimulated, they're actually calming down, and instead of getting crazy about their instruments, they're being shown how to play it in a way that's fairly uniform for the group. That's part of how we got the door open. And Shiri was one of the first people to do that. You were in a special ed classroom early on.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that?
Yes.
And we figured out that we had children that were sitting on the floor. Do you remember?
I
and
do.
Some up in chairs. What do you want to share about that?
Sure. Yeah. We were in a classroom, and we were having a hard time because what we were doing in previous classrooms was passing the ukuleles, and that was something that was working. And in this classroom, it wasn't working. I'm jogging my memory now because
What we've discovered since that time is in special ed, we need every child to have their own ukulele.
Exactly.
They get so entrained into it, whether they're rocking with it or they're just listening with their whole head on it, or they might not have motor, but I have one kid who licks the ukulele and puts his mouth on it to feel the vibration, right? They need their own uke.
Yeah, we had him on the chairs.
Yeah.
And that helped with the focus of being able to put the instrument down and bring it back up and actually transition, which was something that we hadn't been able to do with all of them on the floor too.
So. Yeah, and that teacher was great. She was so excited. And there was another guy, maybe he was an intern or something that was in there. And it really brought the whole class together. I get to go and observe sometimes. It's rare, but I got to observe this sort of miraculous day. And one of the things we had to do was figure out with the kids that were on the floor how we could get them up to chair level, because if they could all see each other's eyes, they could actually start to play together. And what started as, you know, 10 kids doing 10 different things became a cohesive group of children, all with different needs, playing music together. And the teacher was fabulous, and she was blown away. And we went, oh, okay, we can figure out how to do this. And then it grew from there with laboratory classrooms. And now what's happening is that we're doing whole conferences, training any participating special ed professionals. Though what we figured out, we don't have everything. There are other people doing this that have figured out other pieces of it. But the pieces we've got are things like using a traction mat, making this out of shelving liner, and putting it on the wheelchair tray flat, because it creates a grip under the instrument. So if a child has a seizure or is just spastic and they hit the ukulele by accident, it won't go flying off the wheelchair and break. It'll stay right where it's supposed to be. Right?
Yes.
So we're just cutting up stuff from the 99-cent store. And then I researched picks, right? And I found this great Herco pick that's made by Dunlop. And it's different than other thumb picks, because look at this, it's not joined there, and the plastic is thin and it's pliable.
So it's like it feels like about a medium pick, but it clips around. They've made these for a while, but it clips. It's not solid, so you can adjust to the size of your thumb. I have a big thumb, and it grips pretty well. You can use it. I've used these before for banjo.
Yeah, and it's great. Like, so for children with trisomy 21, they might have a really wide thumb and not much fine motor. But if they've got this, they don't need fine motor, and it fits without hurting their thumb. And then they can strum laterally or hold it like this, and they're making music just like everybody else.
Now, I want to ask a question. I'm going to address this to you, Sherry. When you started, and when you start a class, and are the kids, for the most part, pretty introverted, or are they extroverted? and how do you, if they're introverted, how do you get them to open up? And if they're extroverted, how do you get them to calm down?
Wow.
Good question.
You know, generally speaking, they're not introverted. Every once in a while, I had, not this semester, but I think last semester I had one very introverted class, and they were so quiet and none of them wanted to sing. So one of the things that I did was, well, of course, I kept singing and I stayed very comfortable and inviting. And also, when I did hear people, like, I would of course ask them to sing, but when I did hear students singing, I would compliment their voices and say, I really like how the student over here is singing. And with that age group, it's really effective, because we're working with such young kids. So and, you know, also just being patient, because over time they're going to get more comfortable with
me. That's right.
So the first class, maybe they were shy, but the second class they were less shy, and by the third class even less so. And honestly, it was sort of just the general vibe of that class. They were just a more mild-mannered group of kindergartners, you know, which you don't see that often. So normally I'm doing the other thing, which is trying to bring it up and then take it down, and, you know,
kind of
like you would as a performer. It is, even though the classes are GITSE programs, classes are very interactive. We're having the kids songwriting, we're having them, they're part of the class, they're really part of the process. It is sort of, you know, you have to kind of guide the ship.
Yeah.
Is it, are they pretty open to interacting? Or are they, that's what I mean, are they kind of, are they afraid? So they like participating. In
100%. They go crazy. You walk in the room and it's like happy time.
Yeah. I get, my job is to show up and be, like, praised by kids. I get rushed by them as I enter a class.
They hug.
They're so happy to see me. Miss Sherry!
Yeah.
It's music time, you know?
Yeah.
It's very,
that's
it's very
amazing.
Magical.
That's great.
I feel very lucky that I get to do it.
Yeah. And I want to jump in on that question about interacting. One of the things we do that's aligned with Common Core standards is that we teach speaking and listening skills as a part of the program. So we have children, and I think you saw this at the NAMM breakfast.
Right, right.
We have children work in pairs, and we have them turn and talk. So if we're doing songwriting, which we do, we try to do songwriting with every single session with the children, we'll ask them a question for which there is not a right answer. The answer that's right is whatever their answer is. And we have them ask each other what their ideas are. We teach them to cooperate with each other and listen. And then they come back to the large group and they share what ideas they have, and then we tuck those right into the lyrics of the song.
Yeah.
So the reason that's so brilliant, Common Core is very good that way. I know people have lots of opinions about it, but it's a piece that effort did really well. What's brilliant about it is it's actually teaching them to teach each other and learn together,
yeah,
which levels the playing field, and it doesn't put all the emphasis on an authority figure, but the wisdom comes from the children to each other.
Yeah.
And then we're validating that. It's more of a facilitation.
Yeah, no, that's as a sideline at church, we have altar servers, boys and girls, and we train new ones at certain masses and stuff. And but now I have the kids train themselves, so the kids take them.
Oh, that's smart.
And they like it more, they participate more, and the kids like teaching more. Mm-hmm. So like, they were used to doing all of the things like, I'm going to hold the cross, or I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And I told them, I said, now it's time for you to train this person. So you watch them and you let them. Now they're, mm-hmm. instead of wanting to do everything themselves, now they're like, you do it, you do it, you do it.
Yep. So what we call that in education is having agency.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds kind of it's a funny term. But what it means is that the child is responsible and accountable for their own learning process, which means they've got some skin in the game, as opposed to the old model when I was a little girl. The teachers knew everything, and the students were just scared to get stuff wrong. We just wanted to get it right and be patted on the head,
right.
and get a grade that would not make our parents yell at us. Right?
Yeah.
Stay out of trouble.
That's right. Sounds familiar.
But what education has discovered over all these years is when you do that with children, they don't take action for their own learning. They're just waiting for it to be delivered. And we're in a society where kids get that all the time on screens, right?
Right, right.
So by changing that process, music is for sharing, and music is the perfect medium for getting kids to do stuff together without the adult saying,
right,
now do this, and very good, and it's not old school.
Yeah. Well, I remember at the breakfast, one of the things that impressed me is you said to everybody, as if we were the kids, and you said, okay, so you gave us a topic for the song. I think we were doing a lyric.
Yeah.
We would do a verse or something like that. And you stressed that no matter what it is, it's okay. It's all right. If you want to do this, if you're going to talk about this, it's all right. And that impressed me, because it was like, any idea is a good idea. And that's where, once you get them going, then they keep going.
It's really true. There's a song we do a lot with young children. And, you know, we do stuff with older kids, too. It's not like it's all little kids. Right now we're doing mm-hmm. a special program called Math and Music, where we're having, and this is great in the upper grades, too, the teachers are writing their math curriculum into songs that not only give the kids concept, but mm-hmm. give them a way to practice doing the math operations in the song. So they're practicing their equivalent fractions by singing them.
Wow. That's cool.
Right, to the tune of the Crawdad song,
that's
right?
Cool.
It's that kind of thing.
That's really cool.
But one thing we do with young children is we use this old Southern song called Paw Paw Patch. And Shiri could show that. If you wanted to try that, if you wanted to do a little bit of songwriting, we could invite our
right.
friends who are tuning into this thing to
if you're
to
out
jump
there and you're
the
watching
activity.
This live, grab your guitar or your uke or whatever.
Whatever you
I'm
got.
Gonna, I'm going to grab this strange instrument called the Merlin, which they use a lot now, and I'll have her tell about this more.
But strange we'll just and wonderful.
It. Yes.
Now, okay, so we're in C, and that...
I'm in D. But I can adjust.
Okay.
And so we'll all...
You're
all
right, C,
so,
right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're all in... We're the three of us are in C. You're in D, but you're just going to play... Some of it's going to work and some of it isn't, and you shouldn't
worry
about it.
I'll just be the rebel.
Have fun. This is the most fun instrument. Robert Godin designed it as an educational tool.
If I get in trouble, I'll just start...
Right?
There we go.
I mean, we could all tune up a whole step really well.
No,
you
no,
could
no,
not.
No, 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 no.
That
no.
would not be good.
Right.
All right.
I'll be one of the kids.
All right. Okay, so you're going
to... I'm a kindergarten.
So, no, you're being the teacher and we're being the little kids.
No.
Papa. Come on.
No. All right. We'll together.
Okay, good.
Okay.
It's a deal.
One, two, here we go. Pick up your papa. Put it in your basket. Pick up your papa.
That sounded so pretty.
So nice. that's the basic song, and then what we do with it is, okay, so first we talk about what a pawpaw is, which is always a really fun and cute conversation. And then...
It's a fruit from the south. It grows in microclimates, and it supposedly tastes... It's almost like a guava. I guess it's like a cross between a strawberry and a lemon, and somebody's going to probably write to us and tell us what it really tastes like, because we've never seen one.
But most kids say potato or grandpa.
Right?
They say papa. You know, I know.
Right.
Papa's potato
right.
or grandpa.
Exactly. But it's fun to do papa, right, because we have a p sound.
Yeah.
So we're teaching p, right, which is, that's called onset in early literacy.
Mm-hmm.
P, just seeing the p, p. It's the explosive consonant.
Right.
And then there are all sorts of other sounds that the children are learning when they're 3 and 4 years old that they can test out by plugging it into the song. So Shiri can show you how she does that.
Yes. So then we would then ask the class, like, this is because we're co-teaching, so we're working with the classroom teachers, the goal being to train them to be sufficient in this after I leave. So depending on what sound, what phoneme is being worked on in the classroom, will be whatever the word is going to be. So let's say it's R. What's something that starts with R that we can pick up and put in our basket?
Mm-hmm.
And then everybody raises their hand, and we pick someone, you know, choir's hand. and then they always have amazing ideas, and the kids are participating in the song, and that's what
so they give
we
you
grow
the
verses.
They give
the
you
verses.
The keywords to
so,
make the verses.
So let's try that for a second. So
okay.
If you just close your eyes and you make that R sound, and you think about something you could pick up. Now, you could pick it up with your whole body. You could pick it up with a crane. You could pick it up with a net. You could pick it up with your fingers. It doesn't matter how big it is. Just something that starts with R that we can put in. And then you could just put a finger in the air when you know it. And I know there are people out there going, I've got one and we can't hear you.
I'm blanking. I got to figure out.
Yeah. See, now this means this because you're shifting into receptive and creative mode. And it's a brain shift. Shiri?
Robin.
Nice.
Robin. How would you pick up, is it a robin as in a bird or a person named Robin?
Rabbit.
Rabbit.
Rabbit. Rabbit. Okay, how would you pick up a rabbit? Can you show with your hands? Very important with the kids. Oh, she's going to grab that rabbit like that. Let's all grab our rabbit. Should we grab the rabbit?
Okay. Okay.
So we're going to pick up a rabbit like this, right? Pick up a rabbit. Now, how are we going to put that rabbit in the basket? Okay, and we're going to release it into the basket.
Okay.
So we're going to, let's sing it together. We're going to go, I'll play, and you guys, can you do the song leading part, and I'll do the playing part?
Sure.
Co-teaching is great, because you got enough people to cover the bases. One, two, ready, sing.
Pick up your rabbit. Put it in your basket. Pick up your rabbit. Put it in your basket. Pick up your rabbit. Put it in your basket. Way down yonder in the pawpaw patch.
That's it.
Wow.
Great.
That's cool.
Great. Now, do you have an R word?
Radish.
Radish.
Nice.
Ooh. How will you pick up your radish?
I'll pick it up like this.
Did you just take that out of the garden?
Fresh picked.
Fresh picked radish, yum.
Yummers.
Yeah. Okay. So now you know how to do this.
I'd pick
now.
It up and then I would put it in the basket like that.
Yeah. But you can put it in the basket any way you want.
Okay.
You could throw it and make a basket if you're feeling like shooting hoops.
That's a good idea.
Okay. Well, so we're gonna copy.
Okay.
One, two, ready, and pick up a radish, put it in your basket, pick up a radish.
radish, put it in your basket.
Ping!
Pick up your radish, put it in your basket.
You passed my window!
Wander in the pawpaw patch.
So you see what's happening. So far we've got a rabbit and a radish. Now what do you notice about those two words? Think about it. What are the sounds you're hearing? Let's say them. Rabbit and radish. What happened?
The R sound.
That's right. And what happened after the R song sound?
A vowel.
It was a vowel. What was the vowel?
A.
That's right. And it was what kind of A?
A.
A. A. So now, A. Feel that. A. You guys try that with me. You're going to see what it's like to be three. That's hard. That's a forward sound. And then your throat is wide and open. This is all muscle coordination. Now, so imagine that you're a child that's coming here from Syria. These sounds are not normal sounds for you. Or you're coming here from Korea.
Wow.
And you're suddenly in a classroom of kids, most of them who grew up here and have some English.
Mm-hmm.
Or you're a newcomer and you're in a newcomer's class, but you've got a child. Like this year, I was in a biliteracy classroom. I stay in the classroom at least one or two classes every year besides admin work. I had two children that came in that spoke Creole.
Wow.
Right? And then I had children that came from Puerto Rico. And they had none of them had English. And they were in a class where about 80% of the children were language learners, newer to English, or they had street Spanish, but they had no academic Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had a couple who were English speakers, native speakers, whose parents had put them into this dual immersion situation so they could learn Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine a room with 20 kids who are 7, and that's what their language skills are. So when we do a song like this, it levels the playing field.
Mm-hmm.
So our newcomers get to practice those sounds, and then the kids who actually have English think this is a blast because they're coming up with lyrics.
Oh, wow.
And they're playing ukuleles. So they have their challenge level. And then the song is so predictable that the children know what to expect and they're not scared.
Mm-hmm.
Because they know the song form repeats, repeats, repeats. So our shyest, back to your introverted question, the shyest child will sing.
Mm-hmm.
Because they'll get over fear of getting it wrong or being discovered because the whole group is singing.
Right.
And to interject, like this song in particular, but with a few of them, but this one in particular is one where so many schools, like if I come after recess, or I'll hear the group, like the classroom singing it at the playground. Like it just kind of stays with them. Like they.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, it's right. Like,
so it extends the literacy learning because for them it's just a play song. You know, like little kids go out on the playground and they make up songs for jump rope and stuff. But they're going out there and they're singing their literacy lesson.
Yeah, but it seems to me, too, that they see the other child making a lyric and everybody likes it and it's happening, then they want to do it
mm-hmm.
because it's cool. It's
yeah.
cool to do that. And that type of peer acceptance, to me, is I've seen that with the kids like at church and stuff. That's a big thing,
mm-hmm.
that it's cool because they look up to these kids. And these kids show them what to do, and it's okay. It's
mm-hmm.
good. You're doing good.
Mm-hmm.
So you get that interaction, and they want to work together.
Yeah, and then the teacher's so excited because getting kids to write expressively can be hard. Most kids are, you know, being expressive and detailed is something they have to work at. But once it's in the song form, that creativity just comes sparking up and out. So, yeah, that's kind of it in a nutshell. But what we're doing with Amaze, which is adaptive music for achievement, in special ed is we're adapting the tools.
Okay.
Right, so this is that shelving liner. This is just a regular mallet. But,
right.
you know, the core of it, the stem, is hard and it's skinny.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you've got good grip, this is going to be too hard. So all I did was put some shelving liner around the middle and then some fleece fabric. And feel how soft this is.
It's really soft.
Isn't that nice?
So they hold it like that.
They hold it like that, and then we take another piece of fleece and we wrap it around the hand and tie it gently at the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
So if they don't have any strength there, it won't fall out, and they can move and they can hit that drum from the elbow. And then whoever's working with them, if they don't have that motion or that mobility, the paraprofessional, the aide, can actually help move the arm from the elbow. And they get the movement, and once they've got it, they own it, and they're ready to do it again. Here, you got to feel this. It's like every drummer should have a mallet or sticks like that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Oh, nice.
Nice. We're just starting to work with Remo. We're really excited to work with Remo.
Might as well go through all of this.
Okay. So then we thought, well, so, Sherry, have you had the experience in your classroom with shaker eggs?
For my special ed class.
Yes. Okay. And so if they're not Velcroed to a bracelet and a kid doesn't have control over what their arm is doing, those eggs, have you seen it when the eggs go flying across the room or rolling across the circle? Not too bad. That's lucky.
Well, because my special, because we only have these for Gitsy for the one-on-one classes.
Oh, so. You're doing the one-on-ones with this. That's right. So when we put them in the general, in the general group, what happens is if these aren't attachable to something,
it's fly, huh?
Exactly. So we just use a soft little athletic bracelet and Velcro the egg on, and then a child can play it up, down, sideways, round and round, any which way.
That's a great idea.
Thank you. And it's a ton of fun, right? And then you can get the eggs real cheap at Easter at the grocery store and just put some popcorn in there and tape it shut.
Yeah.
And then you've got one for, 10 cents, you've made your instrument.
And at least two of my students that I worked with wouldn't have really been able to hold the egg. So having this shaker made it so that they were able to, having this wristband made it so that they were able to play.
Yeah.
Oh, that's really good. Do you want to talk a little bit about them, about those kids? What it was like for you to learn to do music with children with limited mobility?
Sure, yeah. I definitely came into the situation... like you said, with I made Jess talk to me on the phone before I started. I was like, "Help! I'm scared. What am I going to do?" And she gave great advice. Just come in with an open mind, open heart, and follow your teacher's lead because they're used to working with these students. And it ended up being such an incredible and inspiring experience. I think on every end for my teachers that I work with, I know they just. None of them were musicians at all before, and now they're all with all of their students, and these are all in-home students. They can't go to school, so the teachers come to them, and a couple of them, at least one of them is always in bed and hooked up to a machine and has stuff being monitored.
Is this the child who's trached? She's on a trach tube, or is that a different child?
That's a different child.
Uh-huh.
Because she was in her chair and wheeled out, and then if something was happening, she was having a seizure, then they would wheel her out. But no, this was the one that he's nonverbal, and he was in the bed, and he's older, like a teenager, and we got a really great. Like first response with class, and it's just the smile on the face, but that makes a really big difference. And this teacher, really, really, so awesome. Nikki is such an awesome teacher. She went with it. She learned everything that she could possibly learn and took it to all of her students. Worked really hard at understanding. She's left-handed, so she learned on the left hand, and she learned on the right hand, so she could also teach her students on the right. It was really powerful, and it was also a learning experience for me to work with him, because some of the things, he's in a bed, so you can't run, can't do some of the sound, where's the sound games in the same way that we would want to do, but hand over hand was really powerful.
Can you show hand, because we have Facebook Live, so hand over hand looks like? It's something we have to teach the teachers to do. They're not used to being musically engaged and doing this kind of movement with the kids.
So say the student has their ukulele on their tray, maybe there's a non-slip pad there, and then the teacher has their hand. Usually the thumb pick is really great for this limited mobility because otherwise... the thumb can kind of get like a little bit stuck on the. It's not, we're all just learning, but it's just kind of guiding the hand. So this is the teacher's hand, and imagine it's on the other side, but just sort of this idea.
So the teacher's moving the hand.
The teacher is moving the hand for them so that they get to play.
And then they learn the movement.
Right.
And then they learn
the movement. Now, I'm going to ask both of you guys a personal question. And think about it a little bit, because it seems to me, as musicians and accomplished musicians, a lot of your technique and a lot of what you're doing is automatic, right? You just, it's, you've done it for so long, mm-hmm. you don't think about it. Now, dealing with these children, or in children in general, because it's the same thing, how difficult is it to break it down? Because now you have to kind of dismantle in your mind what you're doing, what mm-hmm. the technique is, what you know, the strumming, mm-hmm. the rhythm, the lyric, right. the harmony, all of that stuff is like second nature. And everybody out there that's been playing and playing for a long time, you don't think about it. You just play. So I just want to ask you, was that difficult to like break it, to like go back, you know, either one, and doesn't matter, or both?
Yeah, I teach, I do have students from time to time. Right now I don't have any students, but yeah, it is interesting because, like you say, it causes you to kind of stop for a minute and break things down into movements, and then to see the student kind of struggle with something that, you know, like you say, I mean, I've been playing for a long time. I mean, and yeah, so it's very interesting, and it's very beneficial, because then when I do play, I'm more aware of those components that make up the motion, you know, or the whole execution of the strumming or whatever that we're doing. You know?
It's like that saying, if you can teach it, you know it.
Yeah.
Right.
You really do. But like, you know, for example, in playing rhythm, as you know, and you push in front of the beat or behind the beat.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we've all done that. So when you swing, you're a little bit behind, and you push the beat a little bit sometimes in rock and stuff. That's a hard concept to explain. That's why I love what Jess does, because you break it down and you know how to communicate it to them. I wouldn't know that well how to do that.
But if you worked for Gitsy, you would learn so much just from like an hour with Jess. Like,
yes. Just seeing her on breakfasts, yeah. I've learned so much.
You know, here's the thing. We as musicians, we take complexity for granted, right? Because we've been trained since we were kids. All of us, right, have been playing forever.
Pretty much.
And if you come to it naturally, because you're blessed, because you have a gift, or because you've come from a family that supported you to do that, then in your own childhood, always there was the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. So whether you were a competitive player and you were in a school orchestra or band and you were competing for a chair seating, or you were doing recitals, there was always this goal in front of getting to the next thing, right?
Right.
And then there was all this pressure of recitals, you know, that you wanted your parents to be proud and come to see you and not be embarrassed if you froze or you made a mistake. So there were all of these expectations for us because we came into this, but that's not normal. Most people don't come in hearing notes, hearing sounds, thinking in rhythmic patterns, thinking in complex musical concepts. That's not normal. That's a gift. So when we have that gift, we get to choose how we use it.
Right.
We can either use it to pursue excellence and originality and become really definitive artists, or to be bread and butter musicians who have a great time playing covers and making a living, or whatever we're doing, composing, whatever it is. But for most people coming into music, if they don't have that gift and they go into a music class, if their music teacher isn't trained to break this down and make it accessible, those kids wind up swept off to the side because they're not going to make the honor choir.
Yeah.
And they're not feeling as confident in their musicality because they know they're out of tune. Or somebody said the terrible thing, which is go stand in the back and make lips move, but don't let any sound come out.
That's awful.
Right? It's awful.
Oh, that's terrible.
It's awful. But if you think about it, for me, the goal is always compassion. If you look at the music teachers who have said that to children, they never said that because they wanted to be hurtful. They said it because they were under pressure to produce a concert. Why? Because that was the expectation in their department, that they would produce a concert that would make all the people clap their hands and say, wow, I'm so proud of our kids. And then they would be funded to go on because they could prove the excellence. Mm-hmm. So our program is really a do-over for anybody that got left out and wants to serve and mm-hmm. make a difference for children. It's a do-over. So the only way to understand music, if you don't just hear it, is to be taught to listen.
That's in general. That's one of the biggest things that comes up with musicians that I work with. It's that I've been on the show that are arrangers and play in bands and front bands. You got to listen to everybody.
Oh yeah.
That listening is, it's not, again, it's not just for special needs. It's for life.
Right.
You need to listen or you don't know what to play.
And that's true in life, as you said, right? If you're not a good listener, you're going to miss important information. And then when it comes down to your interaction with other people or decisions you make, you're going to stumble and pay a price for that. And it's expensive. So teaching listening is, right, setting kids
vital.
Up for some
that's
success.
That's vital. I can't stress that enough.
Right. So how do we do that? Like, if you just think a tone, I'll just play one note on this thing. And let's see, put your hand in the air, and if you're watching, you can do this too. Put your hand in the air when you think you've heard the last part of that tone, and let's see what happens. Don't look at each other, just do it for yourself, okay?
She would be the last because she could feel it vibrating. I heard it in the microphone, but...
But it's also closest to me, so I can hear it longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, this is interesting because then this gets kids into an inquiry stage where they're like, well, why did you hear it longer and you hear it less? Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe we can talk about the physics of sound. Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Now we're really some fun stuff.
That's cool. Now, we're almost out of time. I told
no,
you.
No, we didn't even get to talk about AMI guitars
well,
yet.
Well, I want to go through the guitars. We'll do that first, and I want you to explain this because I've been bragging about this.
Oh, it's just so much fun. I just have to do
but
that.
Go ahead. Let's go ahead and talk about the guitars first.
Please.
Sure. AMI guitars are Sigma guitars. If you're familiar with Sigma guitars, some of you might be too young to remember Sigma. Sigma was a line of guitars that were made by Martin, I think in Japan.
Right.
My first steel string guitar when I graduated from high school way back in 1980 was a Sigma that my dad bought me because I was playing nylon string. And that was an amazing guitar. And I kind of forgot about Sigma, like what happened to them. And I found out about a year ago, I happened to meet Andy Baker, who was his partner, runs the Sigma line. So around the world, these guitars are called Sigma. But for some reason in the States, they wanted to sell them in the States. They had to call them something else. AMI is actually the name of the company in Germany that sells different lines of music products. So they just took that name, AMI, for the guitars. But right. They're Sigma. They're amazing guitars, and I'm really proud to play them. These two I use.
Just briefly, each one of them up and just play, because I got to try these before the show, and they sound amazing.
Yeah, they sound
really
amazing.
Well.
Yeah, I mean...
And that one's spruce top, maple and back, maple sides and back, if I'm correct.
Yeah.
Maple. And I think that's solid, right?
Yeah, it's solid. And then this one is also an amazing guitar too. Kind of cuts through more. This is odd. I like to play this one when I play solo shows. I do quite a bit of acoustic work and electric work, but yeah, these are amazing guitars.
They're beautiful sounding guitars.
Yeah, and they donated triple OME guitars to us, which are so perfect because a lot, you know, 8 out of 10 of the teachers who train with us are women. And of those women, probably, I'd say probably 70% are a little bit smaller. And so that body shape and the depth of it is really comfortable and perfect.
Yeah, no, that's, and then for the kids too. It's
right.
Hard. Some of those guitars, it's hard to stretch.
Yeah, if you ever see, you know, I see people sometimes fighting with the guitar, you know, it's just, they should have something a little bit better,
right.
But I just want to say something real quick. At the NAMM show this past year at the AMI booth, I was there, you know, demonstrating and stuff, and this lady came by, and she had a Guitars in the Classroom bag, Ginger Lily.
Oh, Ginger Lily Love.
And she's telling me about this program, and I thought, wow, this is great. And so I gave her my card, and I never heard from her, and I was like, man, what's going to happen with this? So I looked on the website, and that's how I found Jess, and then that's what happened. We wanted to get involved with what y'all are doing, you know, because I had never heard of Guitars in the Classroom, but that's how it happened.
It was a really nice surprise. It was just great. Yeah, Ginger Lily works very, very hard, and she doesn't always have time to pick up a phone, but she got there.
Yep.
She made that connection, and you followed up, which was really nice.
Yep.
That's interesting. Now, tell everybody about this interesting instrument.
Okay, here. So I'm not going to be particularly technical about it, but this is created. Robert Godin has been helping Guitars in the Classroom since we had a program, before we were even our own nonprofit.
Mm-hmm.
He and his wife Janet got involved and started donating instruments. So we have a very long relationship, and Robert really essentially won the equivalent of a Lifetime Achievement Award from us this
mm-hmm.
year.
Yes.
So well deserved. But he is a sentimental man and has untold creativity, so he keeps making up new instruments
That's
and modifications
awesome.
Of instruments and naming them after people and now animals that he loves. And this is named after the family dog Merlin. May he rest in doggy peace.
Oh, yeah.
And it's fashioned after a dulcimer because it's got a double course of strings on the top. So we're in the key of D here, but we can actually tune it to C and tune it down. Or actually, we're in C right now, but we can drop it down with heavier strings or bring it up with lighter
right,
strings.
Right.
And it's modal, right? And what he did with these double wide frets is he made no wrong notes for beginners.
Right. So,
you just play the fret.
I'm going to take a picture of that because the frets are in a weird. They look weird to the normal guitar player.
I was playing around with it before the show, and it's a lot of fun. I've never seen one of these before. Yeah.
But because it's
so
set up that
melody.
Way, yeah.
It's like no matter what you
it's, there's
touch,
there's no wrong notes.
It's all major too.
It's not an instrument for atonal music, but that's okay. She had these at the NAM. These were just fascinating. They sound great.
They're great. And then this is the dulcimer sound where you strum across all of them.
See nice. That it's simple, and the children can play something really cool
mm-hmm.
fast, which is vital. I mean, when I was in school, Duke, that was one of the big things, is the feedback from playing live was just so important to reinforce.
Mm-hmm.
And so that thing is like, it's easy. You sound great.
You really can't make a mistake with a Merlin. It's
right.
really true. And I think that it just makes people happy, like the ukulele, right? It just makes you happy because you're not worried about how you sound. Guitar is a beast. You know, you've got six strings. We tamed it by tuning it Hawaiian style and creating this developmental method for just playing with one finger at a time, then two, then three. That's how we sort of outsmarted the complexity
mm-hmm.
of it so that people who'd never played won't give up. But this, you don't even have to outsmart. It's just made to help you learn.
And you can buy these.
Oh, yeah.
So you can,
and
if you go to the Godin.
They're
site.
Very, very
you can,
affordable.
You can get them, yeah.
Yeah, and Robert also makes them in G, so they're lower ones that I think they're, are they cedar or mahogany? They might be mahogany tops.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then I just wanted to share this. This is really special. Pepe Romero is quite an amazing builder, and he decided to create a production line because he only wants to really do hand-built, really fine instruments
mm-hmm.
for people and make a limited number, maybe 10 a year. But in order to float the boat and have this company in this beautiful shop that he has out in Oceanside, he needed a production line. So he created these funny little sopranos. And they're funny because look how long the bottom is.
Yeah, they're small, but they're beautiful.
They're beautiful. But the other thing is he made it so that it's resonant enough to handle a low G, right?
Yeah, it's there.
So normal standard tuning would be. And you can get nice. Get nice tone on it. So he donated 59 of these.
Oh,
beautiful.
Gosh.
And they're the last ones that are like this, of this
wow.
line, and now he's got a new line coming out.
And real quick, we're almost, I'm going to have to cut us off, but that the other ukulele.
Oh and these, oh boy, Shiri, you got to tell about those.
These are so awesome. And this is what we use in our classrooms. And oh man, I didn't even talk about my one student that
you're talking about Josh?
That likes to throw things. This was so great for working with him to keep things on his tray because the teacher was not giving him his instrument. And I said, you know what? Really, it can't be broken. It's okay. Just let him throw it. And we made a game out of it, and it was the first time anyone was able to get anything in his proximity without it being thrown. And it was thrown a few times, and it's fine. It lives to tell the tale. I've had students accidentally walk on them. they get, you know, and you can just wipe them down.
Yeah, that's another thing. Yes. Like, for several classes.
These are so great for the special education classes. They're so great for the pre-K and kindergarten classes. Yeah. These Kala Watermans are...
And they're all different colors, so the kids love the colors, and they take turns. I want the yellow one today. I want the blue one today.
In our participating classrooms, we will, depending on the donations this semester, we'll give ukuleles to the classroom teacher. And when they come out and they're different colors than the ones that I have, or it's every new color is like a...
Yeah, and the thing is, the reason we started with ukuleles, because we were guitars only for 15 years, was that Kala called me one day, and basically I was asked if I was sitting down. And I said, no, but I'll sit down. And they said, okay, because we want to give you 1,000 ukuleles. Can you think of what to do with 1,000 ukuleles? He said, yeah.
Sure.
And then they repeated that for a few
years. I got to flash this for everybody. This is you can get this from Guitar... This
Korg actually produced that book with us, and Tiffany Stalker from Korg co-wrote it with me. But it's our method.
So you can, there's a method. So if you're interested for your child, and again, it's for everybody. This is for ages 4 to 104. I like that. And but you can get this, and they have a whole. I mean, there's a lot of material, and also on guitarsintheclassroom.org, there's a lot of information, not just for teachers but parents. And it applies. There's a lot to learn, and it's really fascinating. Now, we're almost out of time, and I got to go real fast. Anything you want? I already mentioned the website, guitarsintheclassroom.org. Anything else you want to?
Just that if people know teachers, or if you are a teacher, or you want to get involved in this, or you're working in a school setting, and you want training, we train all over LA Unified if you're here locally. We work closely with the arts education branch.
Right.
Right, and... just be a part of the process. It's community gathering. And in San Diego this summer, we have free conferences that are going on that are being supported by school districts and also by the National Endowment for the Arts. We got our first NEA grant ever.
Right. And I saw that you can get credit.
Yeah. Now teachers can actually get 1.5 continuing education units for taking
the
2-day training.
Yeah.
And they'll learn a lot more than guitar and uke. We work with tech instruments. We're working with percussion and adaptive drumming.
Yeah.
So it's a lot of fun. If you know somebody who should be there, please go to the website and encourage them to sign up. They will not regret it.
Okay, Scott, your website and what you're doing.
Deathwithmusic.com is the website. We're releasing one single per month this year. We've released 6 already. And if you want to come check out some really strong New Orleans-style funk music, come see the Detweiler New Orleans Jazz Funk Ensemble. We're going to be playing Friday night in Burbank.
In Burbank. Where?
Yeah, at the Urban Press Winery.
Urban Press Winery.
On San Fernando Road.
Okay. Sherry, your website and what you're doing.
My website is www.sherrygoldsmith.com. I have up-and-coming show at the Coffee Gallery backstage with my project, Sherry and the Sherry Beams. It's a klezmer and Yiddish swing.
Wow.
Yeah, another one of my passions is Yiddish revival and... movement, and it's a newer project we're working on recording right now, and there's some stuff up on my website for that. And then July 12th I have a show with the Sour Mash Hug Band, which does kind of some New Orleans old jazz.
Oh yeah, nice.
And a lot of originals that feel like they've been around for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
And mixed in with some other Eastern European stuff. It's like a violin led more string.
Oh, that's awesome.
Project.
That's
so both awesome. Are really, really fun.
I think we need to thank your husband for looking after Ozzy.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Danny.
Thanks for giving Sherry a night out.
Yes.
I know, right?
Hang out with the musicians.
No, thank you, guys. I really appreciate all of you coming down, and what you're doing is just is amazing. And as I told you, it would go by real fast. Didn't I warn you?
Yeah,
it would go by real fast. So that means you guys have to come back. So we definitely have to do more,
because
there's so much more that they're doing. We're just... Every time I've had them on the show, it's tip of the iceberg type of stuff. There's just so many fascinating things, and it's so vital, and it's so important for our children and just the future of music, to be honest with you. So anyway, check it out. And we will see you next week. Everybody have a great week. And again, thank you guys. You guys are awesome. Take care.
Thank you.